And this is our number
time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fast 15. We got an awful lot of news to talk about. We got a lot of stuff to get to, including this. Ursula's birthday! Yay!
Ooh. Oh, look at you!
I got you a little something.
You guys are so kind.
Yeah. What's up?
How beautiful. It's a soy candle.
Yeah.
I love candles, as you know.
I know you love
and your
candles.
Wife does.
Wait, what are you... you putting that on my wife?
Well, if I had to guess... It's beautiful. What? Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You don't and think you know, I could come up with something like that on my own?
No, I do. But I also know that your wife is very thoughtful.
Well,
and
I
you,
can be
as are you. As
independently
you,
of her.
I know. It's a joint gift. And you know what? Yeah. Nicole, thank you.
Actually, it's my wife.
See, I knew it. I think she was one of the first to wish me a happy birthday even this morning.
Really?
On Facebook. Yes. And then I come in and I have this beautiful vase of flowers from Nicole and a bottle of wine.
But describe the vase.
Yeah. And then it's all.
That freaked me out, man.
It's lit up. It lights up and it says, happy birthday, Ursula. It's like personalized, love, Nicole.
Yeah. It's scrolling light.
Yeah.
Like a.
It's like a billboard.
Like a ticker. one of those tickers on a billboard.
It's Bluetooth. You type on your phone what you want it to say and it sends it to it.
Yeah.
It's very ingenious. Cool. Anyway, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Happy
birthday. Happy birthday,
birthday
to Ursula.
Thank you.
Let me share one quick personal story before I get to all the news here. And this is going to sound, and I don't talk about my kids a lot on the show.
You don't?
Not a lot.
Yeah.
And it's going to sound like I'm bragging on one of my kids, but I just thought this was such a cool story. So my middle daughter calls me last night. She goes, Dad, I just got to tell you about something that just happened. She goes, it was really, really weird. So she's, she works downtown, and she's leaving work, and a kind of scruffy homeless guy is coming up to her, and she's kind of dreading the encounter, and he... starts telling her a story about that he's been out of work for a while. And she said he looked real scruffy. And he said, I have a job interview tomorrow. I was going to go get a haircut, and the place was closed.
Hmm.
And she goes, I don't – and, you know, my kids never carry cash. Nobody carries cash anymore. So I don't know how the homeless, the panhandlers, I don't know how they get by because nobody carries cash anymore. Who's got loose $1 bills?
Well, no one of a certain age carries cash anymore. I still carry cash.
But plus, you shouldn't give to panhandlers. You should give to the agencies that help them.
Right.
So, but she said he didn't really ask for money, but he said, do you know if there's... or if there are any other barbers around here. And I'm thinking, she's telling me the story. I just, I go, this is the guy's rap, and he's, wants her to say.
And is this later, later in the afternoon?
Late afternoon.
Because it kind of changes. The whole tenor changes downtown after everyone's going home.
Yeah. And so, she's telling me this. I'm thinking, I hope she didn't get scammed out of some money because the guy's obviously got this story and he's probably told it a million times. And he asked if she knew if there were any other barbers around. And so she pulled out her phone and she found one that was about two or three blocks away. And he said, okay, thanks. He never asked her for money. And so she started thinking about it and she goes, well, I don't know what, I don't know what he was doing. Because she was sure that he was just hitting her up for some dough. So she calls the barber shop and she goes, I know this is going to sound really weird, but if there's a guy that comes in there, she goes, I'd like to pay for his haircut. And she goes,
"Oh my gosh, I'm about to cry."
And
that's so sweet. Okay, and but thinking, okay, is that even gonna? Is he even gonna show up?
Right, exactly. As she's on the phone with the barber, the guy walks in to get his haircut, and so maybe he had money. Because that's why he didn't ask her for money. Maybe he was sincere and he just needed to find a barber. And she, because the whole thing sounded like one of those scam stories that so many panhandlers have concocted. But it sounds like this one was legit and he just needed to find a barber and he might have had enough bucks to pay for it himself. But
was the barber willing to do that?
He took her card information and
hopefully that guy gets a job.
Yeah. So you had an interview today. Oh. So if somebody knows a guy who got a haircut yesterday and had a job interview today, I'd like to find out if he got it.
So I think there's a couple of things that I'm picking up from your story, though. First of all, your daughter, who I already know, is a sweetheart. All of them are, but that is a really sweet thing. And she took a bit of a risk. Even pulling her cell phone out, so people would have just kept on walking. But the other thing is, like, not judging, you know, so cliche, judging a book by its cover.
Yes.
Maybe here was a guy who really just
needed
help
and find
a barber.
Yeah. It was actually, like, the only one of those stories that might have been legit. So I just
wish him luck and thank you to your daughter.
I kind of got goosebumps when she was telling me the story, though, because it was I've become a little cynical, and I'm glad that hasn't completely been imparted into my kids. Okay, got a lot of news to talk about here in the Fastest 15, including, so when I was a kid, we had a oil furnace, and it was, you know, I just remember the big oil tanker truck would come every few months.
Yeah, we still have one.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay.
And I live in Seattle. I live in one of those 90s, the original one.
Yeah. And so right in our yard, there's that little metal cap. And,
yep.
And they'd,
it's filled.
Right. And
we
would often run out of oil and not have a furnace for, you know, weeks at a time because my mom didn't have the money. So, but most people who still have those oil furnaces live in... How old's your house? Do you know when your house was built?
Yeah, 1950s.
Okay. That's the case. And in a lot of cases...
Well, there's like a lot of 1920s homes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's... In a lot of times, it's older people. It's people who... Neither of these apply to you. But most of the time, it's
older
people.
As of today,
people.
I'm a little older.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's right. You are older.
Okay, but I get what you're saying. And yeah, lower income. I mean, because a lot of people have turned over to gas.
And people who cannot afford to make the conversion.
Yes, exactly.
So Jenny Durkin has just proposed that she wants to, because there are 18,000 homes in Seattle with those old oil furnaces, and she wants to have an oil tax in Seattle homes, 24 cents per gallon, and... The reason is she wants to essentially punish people for having oil furnaces. So she says, we want to get people to switch to electric. And natural gas is a fantastic heating fuel. And that's being demonized now because of the climate, whole climate scam. And but this is a tax that's going to be on older people and on people who have not been able to afford the conversion in many of those cases. But then she says, we will use the tax money to fund programs to help the poor switch to electric heat. So you're going to tax, I mean, if you're an older person and you're on a fixed income, maybe you don't qualify for being poor enough to have the government switch over your furnace. But it's just another example of how government is micromanaging our lives, the social engineering in the name of the climate scam. Beat goes on. But another example, too, of how Seattle loves to tax the poorest people. They love to tax minorities with the soda pop tax. They do all this talking about these groups that they care about, and then they're the ones who get slammed with every new tax they propose. Next up in the fastest 15, Oprah Winfrey said something that I just loved. She was on a magazine show last night, and she was talking about the violence in America, what she thinks is behind all of the violence. And Oprah said, I think what people are missing is a core moral center.
There's audio.
Oh, we have the audio.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, here we go.
I think what people are missing is a core moral center.
Hey, that's what I just said. I think I said it better than Oprah.
I think what people are missing is a core moral center. Churches used to do that. It was a central place you could come to. And there was a core center of values about a way of living and a way of being in the world. So until we can return to that, however that is, in whatever form, we will continue to be lost. That's why I actually believe storytelling is a form of a new religion, because it's the place where people can gather and be inspired and see themselves and get filled.
Now, let's face it. If a Republican had said that we're missing a moral center and it's because churches have been replaced by other stuff in our lives, they would get hammered by the left. Bible thumper, blaming lack of religion, because... You know, many on the left just have antipathy for faith. But Oprah says it, and it's okay, because it's Oprah. But she's absolutely right, and this is what I've been talking about with Seattle, that there are two things that used to galvanize us, and it was our schools and our churches, where people could gather. And it was, you know, the schools brought families together who care about and love their kids. The churches, you know, obviously have played a galvanizing role. And then people say, oh, they also divide us. And everybody's got to have a counterbalancing critique of faith. But that's the biggest problem with Seattle right now, is our schools are a mess. And a lot of families, when busing started back in the late 70s, families moved to the suburbs. And so Seattle is the either number one or number two most childless city in America, us in San Francisco. And then Seattle is definitely number one in being the most unchurched city in America, where people do not go to church. So when you've lost the schools and the churches as a you know, forces and gathering places that bond us and bring us together. And that's why we've got, you know, the mess we have here in Seattle. And we, until we can get back to having something that bonds us, and for too many people, they have bonded in their hate of the other side politically. And, you know, people spend their time on Facebook just talking about how much they hate the other side. And if that's your galvanizing force, that's a horrible negative. So Oprah's absolutely right in what she said
there. And, you know, along with her storytelling, she has a podcast where she lets celebrities tell their story. And I think that she's interviewing them, but they cut her out because it's really just the celebrity talking. But you can tell they're kind of, you know, mm-hmm. they're working off of questions, I think. But it's called Oprah, or it's Oprah's masterclass, and I recommend it because
need to start listening.
I just think differently about a lot of celebrities, and not that, and I've learned so much. I literally took notes off of things celebrities in this podcast say. Like Barbara Walters has a great one, and I'm not even I'm not even a fan of hers, but I did write down some notes that she had for women in media. And then there was other ones that, anyway, I wrote down notes of things that they said that I thought were inspiring. So Oprah's masterclass.
Okay.
And it's all about storytelling, what like she said.
Well, I like that. Mm-hmm. I like telling stories. Okay, next up in the fastest 15, comedian Chris Rock is getting blasted today for being racist. So he was talking about the mass shooters last week, and he posted a photograph of actress Betty White. And what he said was, The first thing people say when a mass shooting is announced, then he put up the picture, bet he white.
Oh, no, that's...
I can't believe that had never occurred to me before.
So, white. Look, too soon, maybe, I guess, but he's getting hammered and he's being called racist. A lot of people have commented that the majority of mass shooters are white. And
sometimes I just think we give too much energy and too much attention to these people who are blasting this person or blasting that person.
Cares?
You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, so Chris Rock.
We got so many bigger things.
Yeah,
to
the underlying story, of course, is tragic. We all know that. Yeah. We all acknowledge that.
But he's a comedian.
But putting up a picture of her and saying Betty White for the first reaction when people hear about mass shootings. I think it's kind of clever. Okay, next up in the fastest 15, Seahawks have their first preseason. What?
I'm sorry. That's just there's so much heavy news, and then just that. I mean, that just seems so ridiculous.
Betty White.
That's what the fastest 15 is for.
Seahawks' first preseason game is tonight, and what should we be watching for? Because a lot of the starters aren't going to play. Russell Wilson's not going to play tonight. If you want one thing to watch for that hardly anybody is aware of, the Seahawks center is Justin Britt. And I want you, especially if you have high-def TV, see how sweaty Justin Britt's butt is during the game. Because I had never thought about this in my life. The quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings is Kirk Cousins, and he apparently is very concerned about his center's butt sweat.
Different center obviously adds an element to it. What do you hope to get out of this with Garrett getting his first snaps?
Well, I'm going to take it back to how much he sweats again. He promises that it's not a problem in games, and it remains to be seen because his shorts today were soaked. And he says it's not a problem on game day, so the moment of truth Friday night. But apparently, you know, when they keep those domes air conditioned and you get a break on the bench and you can sit with the cooling fans, I'm hoping that really helps. So that's a big thing I'm going to take away from Friday night is how tough was it to grip the ball after he snaps it to me. If it is tough, we might be in pistol and shotgun all year, which Coach Kubiak and Kevin wouldn't like very much. So
posterior sweating, the kind of thing that needs to be scouted ahead of time with centers.
You know what? I haven't talked to our scouting department about that, but I want to look at him and say, you know, that's one thing we probably didn't get a measurement on during the pre-draft process. But it's really not posterior. It's really just the whole thing. I mean, I look at his shins, and it's just like just poor. I mean, it looks like my window after a rainstorm. And I look at my shins, and they're just, you know, it's just genetic, I guess. So I don't know. But he claims it's not a problem in games. And last time I checked, that's all we get measured on. So we'll go off that.
Butt sweat, one of the things to watch for in this NFL preseason. That is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Betty White! Okay, we got a lot of stuff going on in the presidential pursuits on both sides. Talk about that. Lots more straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Question about news coverage, because we have two monitors here in the studio, and during the show I have always have one on CNN and one on Fox News. So I've been watching the news networks today, and there's hardly been any mention of the mass murder in America last night. Four people in Garden Grove, California, stabbed to death. A Hispanic man was the stabber, and the four victims were all Hispanic. Why does that get no coverage? Why is it? Could it be that the media really isn't that concerned about murders, but they saw El Paso and Dayton as a way to further a political social agenda? You know, in El Paso, they could blame it on Trump. Who are we blaming the stabbings on? Who gets the responsibility? In Dayton, That guy was a Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren supporter. Hated Trump. I didn't hear anybody blame Bernie or Warren for the Dayton murders. But the media has gone berserk in blaming Trump. I have not heard who gets the blame for the Garden Grove stabbing mass murder last night. Could it be that the guy with the knife was just crazy maniac and that it's not some politician's fault? But, gosh, then we'd have to say the same thing about the El Paso shooter, and we couldn't blame Donald Trump then. But it just shows you, how morally bankrupt the decision makers, particularly at CNN and MSNBC, how absolutely morally bankrupt they are, where they pretend like they care so deeply about these mass shootings. They're so angry. They're filled with such righteous anger. And it's all Donald Trump's fault. But when a Hispanic guy stabs four Hispanic people, well, there's no gun involved, so they can't go off on that. It wasn't a white guy who committed it, so we can't invoke the white supremacy thing there. So we'll just ignore it. We'll ignore the mass murder of four people in America last night because it doesn't fit their narrative, because it didn't check enough boxes to get Don Lemon and Anderson Cooper and Chris Cuomo. They can't get all outraged about this mass murder. This one didn't matter to them. They're all just soulless phonies, absolutely soulless. And speaking of which, so MSNBC, I mean, I'm telling you, I talked about this yesterday. The left has lost its collective mind, and I'm talking about politicians and the media. I'm not talking about everybody who's listening to me who's left of center. You're cool. You listen to my show. You've got to be pretty good. But I'm talking about the media and the politicians. They've lost their collective minds. Joe Biden, white supremacy has become the topic that they just cannot get enough of. A month ago, 2 months ago, the whole white supremacy, it got mentioned once in a while. But now they've decided that, well, we can bring down Trump by calling him a white supremacist. So we will. Every other Democrat presidential candidate is going to talk about that he's a white supremacist. CNN, nonstop, white supremacy. MSNBC, white supremacy. That has become the Mueller report for a few months. That was going to bring down the president. So we'll talk about that 24/7. Ah, that didn't work. Michael Avenatti, he's going to bring down the president. We'll talk about him. We'll have him on 400 times. Oh, that didn't work. Stormy Daniels. We will have her on set, and we will have her talking about the president, and we will end his presidency with Stormy that one didn't stick. White supremacy. That's what we'll use. We'll call him a white supremacist. So Joe Biden was he decided to jump on the whole white supremacy bandwagon earlier.
It's both clear language and in code. This president has fanned the flames of white supremacy in this nation. His low energy, vacant-eyed mouthing of the words written for him, condemning white supremacists this week, I don't believe fooled anyone at home or abroad.
Trump's called Biden low energy, so he'd say, I'll call him low energy. And his vacant, empty words that he reads from a teleprompter, Biden's reading all this from a teleprompter. It's so bizarre. Oh, he's not going to be much of a match for the Democrats. Sorry.
At home or abroad. His energetic embrace the energetic embrace of this president by the darkest hearts and most hate-filled minds in this country say it all.
Yes. Anybody who supports the president has a hate-filled mind. But what did Joe say there? Joe, could you repeat part of that for me?
His energetic embrace. The energetic embrace of this president.
His energetic embrace. The energetic embrace.
Sounds like Nancy.
I can't get enough of that. I listened to that about seven times this morning, and I think he was trying to restate energetic embrace.
His energetic embrace. The energetic embrace of this president.
Joe. And then Joe was, he had a news conference, just or some press stopped him on the street about an hour ago. And a reporter fact-checked him in real time. Because Joe keeps saying the same thing about Charlottesville, trying to push this white supremacy thing. And Biden just has made up, you know, what Trump actually said.
Mr. Vice President, are you aware that you were misquoting Donald Trump in Charlottesville? He never called neo-Nazis very fine people.
He called all those folks that walked out of that, they were neo-Nazis, shouting hate. Their veins bulging.
But he said specifically that he was condemning them.
He did not. He said he walked out and he said, let's get this straight. He said there were very fine people in both groups. They're chanting anti-Semitic slogans, carrying flags.
But you're aware that he...
Okay, and then one of his handlers dragged him away because they were afraid that Joe might say this.
The energetic embrace of this president.
Yeah.
But you didn't explain how his hands, and he was doing this like weird hand thing, getting into it. He looked crazy.
He's not good ad-libbed, and his handlers know that.
Clenching his teeth.
Yeah.
He was like a crazy person.
He was filled with rage. Oh, I got so much more great audio to play for you. Let me take a real quick time out, and then we will continue because I got a bunch of stuff. Yeah, yeah, get out of here, as Joe Biden would say. Next on the Dory Monson Show. We're talking about how the political and media leftists have lost their collective minds. MSNBC, man, they have been trotting out some loons as guests on their show. Malcolm Nance explained that the president is sending secret messages to neo-Nazis. I mean, this is what passes for analysis these days. This is, people talk about Alex Jones and his conspiracy theories. That has become, but Alex Jones is kind of a fringe guy. This is NBC. And this is the kind of guests they get.
These people feel that they are the foot soldiers and executors of what the disenfranchisement that the white race is feeling. And Donald Trump is giving them subliminal orders in their head.
Where else do you give subliminal orders if not in the head? So Trump is giving subliminal orders to neo-Nazis, according to an MSNBC guest. And I don't remember who it was, but I heard somebody say, Trump's got a bunch of faults, but he's the least subliminal president in history. One of his faults is whatever pops into his mind, he blurts out without any filter. He doesn't do anything subliminally. But I had that soundbite yesterday of another MSNBC guest, a former FBI assistant director, Frank Figliuzzi, talking about they lowered flags to half-mast for the shooting victims, and they are raising them back up at sundown. And that is a secret message to neo-Nazis, according to this MSNBC guest.
The president said that we will fly our flags at half-mast until August 8th. That's 8 8. Now, I'm not going to imply that he did this deliberately, but I am using it as an example of the ignorance of the adversary that's being demonstrated by the White House. The numbers 8-8 are very significant in neo-Nazi and white supremacy movement. Why? Because the letter H is the 8th letter of the alphabet, and to them, the numbers 8-8 together stand for Heil Hitler. So we're going to be raising the flag back up at dusk on 8-8. No one's thinking about this. No one's giving him the advice, or he's rejecting the advice. So understand your adversary to counter the adversary.
I mean, this is insanity. The number 8 is a white supremacy number. Now, they've gone insane. And then I got one more for you. Stephanie Ruhle is an anchor on MSNBC, and she has come up with this great thought that the mass shootings might give Beto O'Rourke's stalled presidential campaign some momentum.
Maria, Beto O'Rourke, who's from El Paso, has been very forceful. He dropped an F-bomb with reporters yesterday, and I want to...
Ooh, that's forceful. He dropped an F-bomb. Cool. Edgy.
Hear what he told Chris Hayes last night.
It is that hatred in which the president traffics, the racism that he promotes, the violence that he encourages. No one should be surprised. No one should be asking themselves how this could happen in our country. It's very clear in this president's maiden speech as a candidate for the highest office in the land. He chose to talk about communities like mine, to describe Mexican immigrants as rapists and criminals.
And again, these guys, it's like the Biden thing. No, he said the rapist and criminal Mexican immigrants are rapists and criminals. He didn't say they all are, but he had to make that up. Anyway, I got to finish the Stephanie Ruhle right after the news here, but you won't be amazed how she spun this. Next, Dory Monson Show.